Welcome to Learning English on The Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the show, we have stories from Susan Shand and John Russell. Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close the show with an American story. Today, we hear part one of The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky by Stephen Crane. But first, here's John Russell.
Theaters are expecting difficulties in coming back from coronavirus-related restrictions and closures. As businesses begin to open around the world, the path forward for theater is unclear. This is especially true for large-scale musicals and dramas. Live theater, with its high costs and large numbers of people, may not be the same for some time, producers and actors say. Mary McCall is the executive director of the Actors Labor Union Equity in the United States. Speaking with the Reuters news agency, she described the health concerns of doing live theater. When we cry, there are tears. Sometimes our noses run. Sometimes when we sing or are yelling, we spit and that lands on other actors, or it might land on the orchestra pit. And we are doing that 8 times a week, she said. New York City's Broadway theaters closed in the middle of March. London's West End theaters followed a few days later. Almost no one expects them to reopen when the current closure period ends on June 7th and June 28th, respectively. Jessica Corvos is president of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Really Useful Group. We are very tied to social distancing measures, she said. As long as they are still in place, a mainstream return to theater and musical theater, in particular, looks pretty impossible. In April, a Reuters Ipsos poll found that only 27% of those questioned would go to a theater performance when theaters reopen. Some 51% said live theater should not return at all before a vaccine for the novel coronavirus is available. However, the theater world wants to get going before then. The U.S. Office of Equity has asked a disease control expert to develop guidelines for actors and other people who work on plays. In addition, people are thinking about what kinds of plays would work best for taking theatrical productions out of traditional spaces. Brian Moreland is producer of the upcoming Broadway shows American Buffalo and Blue. I don't think theater will go away. I just think it will be different when it comes back, he said. Theaters may be dark, but online rehearsals are continuing. Broadway producer and investor Brisa Trinchero is hopeful. She said writers are working on new kinds of theater productions, and some companies are looking to do one-person shows. We are an industry of creative people, she said. Trinchero added that there would likely be an increase in smaller performance pieces, cabaret, and what she called more intimate things. Musicals are likely to be the last to come back. Musicals have large casts and crews. They are also more costly. Shows with one or two actors might work for some. So might a plan to limit theaters to 50% capacity. But for big musicals, it wouldn't be possible commercially to survive on those audience levels, said Corvos. Even with many issues to resolve, The theater community is more hopeful than a month ago. It believes that the coronavirus-related restrictions have showed the value of human connection and live performances. People are now talking about what it looks like on the other side, and 3 to 4 weeks ago, we weren't prepared to have this conversation, Moreland said. So that makes me very hopeful. I'm John Russell.
Are you at risk of getting seriously ill from the new coronavirus? Here are some things to keep in mind. 80% of coronavirus cases are mild. Young and healthy people are at low risk. Other people and those with serious health conditions have a greater risk of serious illness or even death. If you have a cough, fever, and difficulty breathing, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the World Health Organization website at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
American high school students have turned to the internet to save their traditional end-of-year prom experience. The students are connecting through online video services to dance, listen to music, or find other ways to celebrate the end of the 2020 school year. In the United States, most high school students attend a yearly formal dance known as prom. This year, with schools closed and the nation shut down because of coronavirus, proms have been canceled. So students and teachers decided to use technology to hold virtual proms. Some will use the video link-ups to show off their best prom clothing. Others, including many who did not have the chance to buy formal clothes, may choose to take part in jeans or t-shirts. Many of the proms are getting support from celebrities and well-known companies. Teen Vogue magazine and restaurant operator Jack in the Box are supporting parties for thousands of teens. Actor John Krasinski threw a prom on YouTube and was joined by singer Billie Eilish. Actress Allison Williams, star of the Oscar-nominated film Get Out, served as the guest music DJ for virtual prom-goers in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's terrible that it's happening to your class, but I hope you're having a good time anyway, Williams told about 100 high school students, friends, and teachers in mid-April. She wore a shiny, copper-colored dress. Alauna Stultz is a high school student in Ohio. She will wear a special blue outfit when she attends an online prom May 9th. The prom is being paid for by two web businesses, an event planning site, and a clothing rental company. I was looking forward to prom, she said. I was planning on going with a group of my friends. But it's really cool. We can still dress up and do everything we would do for a prom. The students have filled social media with sweet photo memories from online proms. In some, fathers dressed in formal wear danced with their daughters. Others showed whole families involved in the virtual parties. Prom is definitely one of those bigger life moments when you're growing up, said Teen Vogue editor-in-chief Lindsay Peoples Wagner. The Teen Vogue website expects about 5,000 teens to attend its virtual prom on May 16th. Organizers are working with high schools around the country to set up separate online areas for each school. Many popular celebrities and internet influencers will appear throughout the event. Jack in the Box is working with schools in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Phoenix, and Houston to hold virtual proms in May. The company will provide free food to all the students by giving them special delivery instructions. Donna Shapiris is an associate professor of mental health at Palo Alto University in California. She sees some sadness in these virtual proms. They also crave human connection, she said. They crave a chance to dress up and dance with their friends. They crave some time that's just for them. And this year, they can't get it. I'm Susan Shand.
This week we answer a question we received from Norfidea in Indonesia. What is the difference between just and only? How and when should I use them? Thank you. Norfidea, Makassar, Indonesia. Dear Norfidea, thank you for writing to us. This is an interesting set of words, because when used as adverbs, they seem to mean the same thing. Here are some examples. There is just enough time to listen to one more song. Or, there is only enough time to listen to one more song. She was just a baby when she came to America. Or, she was only a baby when she came to America. I have just one brother. Or, I have only one brother. But that is not always true. We will look at the times when you must choose one and not the other. Just can mean merely, barely, or exactly. It is also used to describe a time in the recent past or a simple truth. Here are some examples where you can use just, while only would be incorrect. I just made tea. Would you like a cup? Here, just means recently. When you want to say recently, you should always use just. She lives just north of the city center. Here, it means barely. He just does not have enough talent to sing in the opera. Here, it is a simple truth. The adverb only comes from the word one and means alone or with no others. A good way to think of this word is that it describes a unique or singular situation. Here are some sentences where you can only use the word only. The gym is only for women. We will go home only if it starts to rain. I love only you. A good way to remember the difference is to use only for a special or single thing and just for exact ideas and recent events. I hope this is just the answer you sought. And now I have only one request. Please send your questions about English to us by email. learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is American Stories. Our story is called The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky. It was written by Stephen Crane. We will listen to the story in two parts. Today, we will hear the first part of the story.
Bride comes to Yellow Sky. The great train was rushing forward. Such steady dignity of motion that a glance from the window seemed to simply prove that the flatlands of Texas were pouring toward the east. A newly married pair had come on this train at San Antonio. The man's face was reddened from many days in the wind and sun. His roughened hands were continually moving over his new black clothes in a most nervous manner. From time to time, he looked down respectfully at his suit. He sat with a hand on each knee like a man waiting in a shop for a haircut. The glances he gave to other passengers were few and quick. The bride was not pretty, nor was she very young. She wore a dress of blue with many buttons. She continually turned her head to regard some part or other of her dress. It made her feel strange. One could tell that she had cooked and that she expected to cook dutifully. The searching glances of some of the passengers as she had entered the car had brought the blood rushing to her face. Her uncomfortable expression was strange to see upon this plain face, which was usually calm and almost emotionless. They were evidently very happy. "Ever been in a train like this before?" he asked, smiling with delight.
"No," she answered. "I never was. It's fine, isn't it?"
"Great. After a while, we'll go forward to the dining car and get a big dinner. Finest meal in the world. Costs $1.
"Oh, it does?" cried the bride. "A dollar? Oh, that's too much for us, isn't it, Jack?"
"Not on this trip, at least," he answered bravely. "We're going to enjoy ourselves." Later, he explained to her about the trains. "You see, it's 1,000 miles from one end of Texas to the other. The train runs straight across it and only stops 4 times. He had the pride of an owner. He pointed out to her the beauty of the car they were riding in, and in truth her eyes opened wider as she observed the rich sea-green cloth covering the seats, the shining silver and glass, the wood that shone darkly like the surface of a pool of oil. To the minds of the pair, their surroundings repeated the glory of their wedding that morning in San Antonio. This was the spirit of their new life. And the man's face in particular shone with a joy that made him appear foolish to certain passengers. In the minds of some, there was supposed to be something hugely funny in the pair's situation. "We're due in Yellow Sky at 3:42, he said, looking tenderly into her eyes.
"Oh, are we?"
she said, as if she had not been aware of it, to show surprise that her husband's remark was part of her wifely duty. She took from her pocket a little silver watch. As she held it before her and stared at it with a look of attention, the new husband's face shone. "I bought it in San Antonio from a friend of mine," he told her proudly.
"It's 12:17,
she said, looking up at him with a happy expression which, nevertheless, showed a lack of experience in conversing with men. A passenger, observing her small nervousness, laughed to himself. At last they went to the dining car. The man serving their table happened to take pleasure in directing them through their meal. He viewed them with the manner of a fatherly guide, his face shining with kindness. But they did not understand his attentions. As they returned to their seats, they showed in their faces a sense of escape. It was evident that, as the distance from Yellow Sky grew shorter, the husband became more nervous. His red hands were even more noticeable. He was rather absent-minded and far away when the bride leaned forward and spoke to him. As a matter of truth, Jack Potter was beginning to find his deed weighing upon him like a great stone. He, the town policeman of Yellow Sky, was a man known, liked, and feared in his community. He, an important person, had gone to San Antonio to meet a girl he believed he loved, and there he had actually married her without discussing any part of the matter with Yellow Sky. He was now bringing his bride to a sure-to-be-surprised town. Of course, people in Yellow Sky married as it pleased them, but Potter's thoughts of his duty to his friends, or of their idea of his duty, made him feel he was sinful. He was guilty of a great and unusual crime. Face to face with this girl in San Antonio, he had leaped all over the social fences. At San Antonio, he was like a man hidden in the dark. A knife to cut any friendly duty was easy to take in his hand in that distant city. But the hour of Yellow Sky, the hour of daylight, was approaching. He knew very well that his wedding was an important thing to the town. It could only be equaled by the burning of the new hotel. His friends could not forgive him, he felt, and now the train was hurrying him toward a scene of surprise, merriment, and blame. He glanced out of the window again. Yellow Sky had a kind of band which played its horns and drums painfully to the delight of the people. He laughed without heart as he thought of it. If the citizens could dream of his arrival with his bride, they would march the band at the station and accompany them among cheers and laughter to his house. He decided that he would use all methods of speed and cleverness in making the journey from the station to his house. Once safely at home, he would announce the news. Then he would not go among the citizens until they had had time to master their emotions. The bride looked anxiously at him.
"What's worrying you, Jack?"
He laughed. "I'm not worrying, girl. I'm only thinking of Yellow Sky." She understood, and her face turned red again. They shared a sense of slight guilt that developed a finer tenderness. They looked at each other with eyes softly glowing. But Potter often laughed the same nervous laugh. The deep red color upon the bride's face did not lessen.
"We're nearly there," he said.
As the train began to slow, they moved forward in the car. The long line of cars moved into the station of Yellow Sky.
"The train has to get water here," said Potter from a tight throat and face as one announcing death. Before the train stopped, his eye had searched the station, and he was glad and surprised to see there was no one there except the station master.
"Come on, girl," said Potter with a thick voice.
As he helped her down, they each laughed in a strained manner. He took her bag and told his wife to hold his arm. As they hurried away, he saw that the station master had turned and was running toward them, waving his arms. Potter laughed, and sighed as he laughed when he realized the first effect of his wedding upon Yellow Sky. He grasped his wife's arm firmly to his side, and they hurried away. The California train was due at Yellow Sky in 21 minutes. There were 6 men in the Weary Gentleman's saloon. One was a salesman who talked a great deal and rapidly. 3 were Texans who did not care to talk at that time, and 2 were Mexican sheep farmers who did not usually talk in the saloon. The saloon keeper's dog lay in front of the door. His head was resting on his feet, and he glanced sleepily here and there with the ready watchfulness of a dog that is sometimes kicked. Across the sandy street were some bright green grass spots, so wonderful in appearance next to the burning sands in the hot sun. At the cooler side of the railroad station, a man without a coat sat in a chair leaned back against the building. He smoked his pipe. The waters of the Rio Grande River circled near the town, and beyond it could be seen great flatlands. Except for the busy salesman and his companions in the saloon, Yellow Sky was sleeping. The salesman leaned easily upon a table and told many tales with the confidence of a storyteller who's found new listeners. He was interrupted by a young man who suddenly appeared in the open door. He cried, "Scratchy Wilson's drunk, and he has started to make trouble." The 2 Mexicans at once put down the glasses and disappeared through the rear door of the saloon. The salesman, not understanding the importance of the warning, jokingly answered, "All right, old man, suppose he has. Come in and have a drink anyhow." But the information had made such an apparent impression upon everyone in the room that the salesman was forced to see its importance. All had become instantly serious. "Well," he said, filled with mystery, "what is this?" His 3 companions started to tell him, but the young man at the door stopped them. "It means, my friend," he answered as he came into the saloon, "that for the next 2 hours this town won't be very healthy." The saloon keeper went to the door and locked it. Reaching out of the window, he pulled in heavy wooden boards which covered the windows and locked there. The salesman was looking from one to another. "What is this, anyhow?" he cried. "You don't mean it's going to be a gunfight?"
Come back to American Stories next week for the second half of The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky by Stephen Crane.
That is our show for today. Thanks to John Russell, Susan Shand, and Joe Robbins for their reporting. Tune in tomorrow to listen to our program, Words and Their Stories, and hear other news and information from around the world. And we want to hear from you. What subjects would you like covered on our shows? Let us know. You can send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com or contact us through our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver, wishing you the best of health. And as always, thanks for listening.